Good evening, everyone. It's Wednesday night at 7 o'clock, and we're in the midst of a remarkable review of the American Book of the Dead guidebook by E.J. Gold. And it's a, if you haven't had a chance to work with it, not only is this a remarkable cover in the paperback edition, but you're going to see it was written right around the same time that E.J. wrote also the Red ABD, which is the classical one that we use for reading.
Mm-hmm.
And but this is a whole other slant on it. And I asked him about it at one point. He says, well, you know, I went to, and Rashad says, why don't you work with the 99 names of God? And you'll see that a lot of the books there that have the name of a particular attribute of God, and that opens the book up. And then throughout the book, then he, in the various verses, he goes into a discussion of the transit state. And a few weeks ago, Pat and Ivan, who's not able to be here tonight, we were discussing a particular verse in book 18 of the guidebook here. And as we got into it, it really struck us some of the concepts there in the very last part mm-hmm. of the Red ABD. And it reminded me that there's a whole thing that goes through, that the practitioner goes through in the end of the voyage as rebirth is certain, in a sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Rebirth is, and it's like, okay, now what do I do?
Right.
And every one of these verses, if you start to read them carefully, and boy, we should, you start to read them carefully, you begin to realize that we've been given guidance. It's like everywhere you are in the Bardos at that time, there's, okay, now you're here. Try this. Try this.
Very specific.
Very specific. We're never left without guidance. Our job is to seek the guidance. Our job is to say, hey, I don't quite know what to do. A little bit of help here, please. Okay. And as I'm reading this, I'm thinking about the end of the ABD, the chambers. There are 49 chambers. And it takes roughly 54, 55 days to read through a whole cycle for somebody. And it just jogged my memory. I thought, wait a minute, when did a particular individual pass away?
Mm.
And it reminded me of something that happened about a month and a half ago, and I got an email from Valerie about something. And I go, has she just finished the reading cycle? Is that why this is coming through? And I thought give her a ring, I did, which now that means I sent her an email. And she responded, and she said, yeah, we're like days away, or we're at the end, very much so. And what I realized at that time, these are individuals, Linda is here, Valerie, Harry, George on the phone. These are individuals that are hard workers. They work at their path. They work at it a lot. And to read through a full cycle for someone is a lot of discipline. And so somebody to do that, there's a lot went on. So I said, I wanted to know, would they be willing to tell us a little bit about that? And fortunately for us, here they are tonight.
Voila.
Here they are tonight. And so I was just hoping for a couple of things. One is to hear the story.
Yes.
And the reason I want, there's reasons I'm going to hear the story, but I won't say it right now. I'll say it later. But it also will give a platform for others who have read or are contemplating reading, what would it be like? What would it feel like as I go through this adventure? Right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're not going to be reviewing one of the books in the guidebook tonight. But we're going to take a special class and just learn from our friends what happened. And so I was wondering, Valerie, if you'd like to get us started and just rewind back to the early part of March.
Okay. I actually want to take you back to September in 2015. Linda's mother died in September 2015. And the reason why that's important is because Linda and I did the ABD reading for her mother in the same house where my mother was living in September.
Okay, so let me see, did I get this right? So Linda, your mother and Valerie's mother were living in the same residence?
No, my mother was in Houston. And so I spent all of August and September in Houston with my mother and my siblings. Practicing, and I was practicing white tara. I'd been empowered by the monks of the Garden Sharti Monastery in India. But anyway, I've been in, had the white tara.
Garden Sharti, you're involved with the Garden Sharti monks?
Right, right. And so I went to an empowerment for white tara, and so for those 60 days, that's what I was doing day and night, was just to, it was my refuge and my support and comfort at that moment. At that time, I hadn't gotten much into the into the ABD at that point. But so that's where I was. And so I came back in October to Raymar and Valerie's hall.
Yeah. Okay.
And what I was reporting is that Mother heard me reading for Linda's mother.
Ah. So now, when you say you were reading for Linda's mother, what do you mean?
I mean that I read from the day of Terminus that Linda's mother transitioned. I read for her from ABD. For 54 days, actually.
Okay.
So my mother heard that when she was still semi-conscious in her Alzheimer's state. She heard me morning and night, 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. Texas time, read for Linda's mother.
So let me get this straight. You were in the home where your mother was, and you were reading for Linda's mother, who was in transit at that time.
That is correct.
Right. I had come back from Houston. Back home, taking care of Raymar.
Okay, so just to help us out and to help them out, can you say, Linda, can you say what your mother's name was?
Yes, her full name is Lena Louise Roundtree, and she went by Louise Roundtree.
So Louise, and then Valerie, what was your mother's name?
Raymar, R-A-E-M-A-R, Schoen, S-H-O-W-N.
Okay, so part of this process that we're doing tonight, okay, part of this process is to also include Raymar and Louise in this process of reflection.
Correct.
Okay. So we're using that as a methodology to help them, and they will come through in this particular manner at some point, and they'll give us little hints as to our direction.
And I have one question for you. Could you please say which version of the Book of the Dead were you using?
Hold on just a second.
They were using the red book, Pat, and she'll give you the edition that she used.
Okay.
The red book. Okay.
So,
I'm asking for the distinction because sometimes our overlapping use of the word ABD can be a little confusing.
Yeah, Pat's very important for us to make that distinction, and I appreciate it for the recording as well.
It's the 30th anniversary.
The 30th.
Great,
good.
Thank you.
Right. And we did, prior to this class, and Harry and George were very much part of it, we did a review of the ABD, and that took us 60 weeks.
Yes.
We're slow readers here. So, and okay, so thank you. And go ahead and proceed then, Valerie, please.
Okay, so part of why I wanted to share this with everybody was to help all and everyone understand that Mother had the opportunity to go through the full cycle while she was still in the corporal form. So on February 29th, when my mother and I came back together after being separated for 5 days.
Right.
My mom was in the process of terminus, and so I started the reading on February 29th.
Okay.
And she was conscious still. We didn't go through the process biochemically with a biological machine of completely relieving her from pain until the 1st of March. She transitioned out of her body on the 4th of March, and at that time, all of the family had assembled. My two sisters were present. I was out of the house, but only a few miles away. My younger sister arrived on the 3rd, and Mother left her body between 2 a.m. and 4 a.m. on March 4th. While my sister and her partner were sleeping in the same room as my mom. So they heard that her breathing stopped, and they called me to let me know that that had happened. We were receiving hospice.
What time did you get the call?
I got the call at 4 a.m.
That's about when I
got it. So 4 a.m. is 2 here.
And on March 4th.
Yeah, 2 hours difference. Okay. Now, let's rewind a little bit. So a few days prior to that terminus notification, you had started to read.
That is correct.
So tell me what it felt like exactly. You walked into the room, you had your book in your hand, and then you sat down. And you started to read. What was it? What was the space like for you?
It's very interesting that you mentioned that I walked into the room because I didn't. I allowed her space where the biological machine was located to be separate from the reading room.
Ah.
In the reading room, which was literally separated only by a wall, I had a sacred space that had a window facing the east. And there was kind of like an altar where I had a candle. I had my singing bowl, which is about the size of a salad bowl. It's a Tibetan singing bowl.
Okay, good size one.
That I use as a bell. And she was in another room, but the door was open. So at 6 a.m. on the morning of March 1st, when I rang the bell and lit the candle and read the symptoms description, she was able to hear me without any problems at all. but I wasn't physically next to her.
Okay, but this is your mother, right? This
yeah.
is your mother you've had a whole life with, and you've had, she raised you, you had lived together, loving moments, you battled together, and now here
mm-hmm.
we are in this different space, and yet you're reading for her, right?
Yes.
How was that for you?
It was very sacred. She and I shared a biological machine connection where I was literally able to sense what her machine needed and was feeling.
Right.
So when I made this shift and did the readings for her, it literally was separating out of the biological machine into the essential self and doing a habit that gets us through.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for you. As a ordinary worldly person, we might sometimes reference our perceptions and capacities with our mothers as being either intuitive or close or, you know, reading each other's minds, that kind of thing. And what I hear you saying is the translation of that into the reading practitioner voyager dynamic was the relationship was the same. It was only on the essential plane. Do I understand correctly?
Yes, you did.
That's what I thought.
Very important. Particularly when we're reading for a relative or a friend or whatever, can you get to that space?
Yeah.
And basically, as the reading allows us to go to that space, and we can
yes.
be in. Okay. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to point out that one of the things that I used as a mechanism to get us to that space was
yeah.
the obligatory reader's invocation.
Okay. So, you know, and we
a
were...
As a step ladder.
That's a literally, Pat's reminding us, that's a step ladder.
Yes.
That's like Jacob's ladder. It leads us from the earthly plane to a different plane, and all we have to do is read it with as much sincerity as we can bring at that moment.
Yeah.
That's all. We don't have to be anything other than that.
That's
so
right.
So we use our eyes, our voice, because it's liberation, great liberation through hearing. So you're reading in the accompanying room, you have your Tibetan bell, and your mother heard you. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so the next piece was I started reading for her on the 1st. She left her body on the 4th. By the time she actually left her body, my perception is that she really did join with the clear light, that she
okay.
was already prepared by the time that her body had finished functioning. She had done the work she needed to do on an essential self level. And so what I was reading for was her previous self, not the one that was current.
Right.
Okay.
Do you want to say more about that?
Part of my perception is, and this is my intuition, is that when I was reading for Linda's mother, the essential self in my mom was paying attention.
Uh-huh.
And with Alzheimer's and dementia disorders, I think a lot of what happens for individuals is they slowly go through the process of disconnecting with the attachment to the biological machine, finishing their work through the Bardos. Linda and I and Harry all experienced things like Mother screaming out in her sleep, and we recognize that on a conscious level, she wasn't even aware that she was having those experiences. But on a spiritual level, she was finishing work that needed to be done on this level so she could leave.
Got it.
David, if I might add something.
I was just about to call on you, mister. Go ahead.
During this process, I mean, which, you know, Valerie's been taking care of her mother here for 7 or 8 years as this disease progressed. In the process of doing this, and it's like a monastery over here. It has a very sacred vibe, and it's a sacred space, the entire house.
Right.
So it had become even more so once she began reading for Linda's mother. Raymar listened in while she was reading, and so Valerie's voice as a guide was firmly linked to her mother, and long before she transitioned, and this linkage was set quite early, when and much work was already done when she passed. And we did come to view Alzheimer's as a way of slowly, albeit painfully and uncomfortably for the people involved, but nonetheless of separating the essential being from the biological machine over a period of time. And I'm encouraging Valerie to write this up because I think it would be a nice way to reframe the process, which is so painful for family members. Also,
Go ahead.
Raymar was building essence habits for years before she passed, and this was a building process not reflected by the deteriorating biological machine. I mean, the two were already separating. So as one diminished, the other grew in strength, is my perception.
We also recognize
this as being the case when Raymar finally did pass away on the early morning hours of March 4th. I think that was a Friday. We arrived later to begin reading for her, and both of us sensed that she was already completely gone. I usually establish a link with the person that I'm reading with, and I would think with this lady, whom I was quite close to, and we were both quite fond of one another, I would have an even stronger sense, but she, in my opinion, had long since vacated the premises, and the characteristic feeling of the environment was peace. It was an extremely peaceful place. So we were reading for all of us. We were reading for everybody, not just for Raymar. She had already, already left.
But you were reading for Raymar as well. And I want to point out also the, and I wasn't sure why I was so interested in having Linda come, because I don't think we've ever met, but now I'm a little more certain. And that's because when your mother, when people were reading for Louise, they were preparing this ground. Does that make sense to you, Linda?
Yeah.
And preparing the ground in a certain way to be able to get into the essential self space for the reading when Raymar was ready for that. It takes a bit of practice, that's all.
Well, okay. I think it was, at once it was comforting and informative. I know that I benefited from the readings and from the lessons, and from every reading, every passage had something in it that I needed. I felt I needed, and that I sometimes didn't even know I needed.
I know it.
Yeah, and
the timing is great, isn't it?
It's amazing. It's amazing, and even certain chapters happening as, you know, at the sequence that they, when they do, it was like, oh my gosh, I mean, did the words change on the pages because the circumstances had changed in the house? Some of it was just too apt. Magical, I guess.
Linda, I'm going to just check with you on a couple of things. The reading chamber that you're referring to as the one that was for your mom but was heard also by Valerie's mom, was that one where you were present in her room, or was that one where you were not physically in the same room?
Not. We read in the same room that Valerie then read for her mom.
Correct. Okay. Right. And then the room that was being used as the reading chamber for Valerie's mom, is that where everyone was at the time that Valerie's mom passed on March the 4th?
No. People were sleeping. No one was in that room, in the reading room.
Okay.
Good. Okay. And then when you began the cycle of readings after the physical body had been removed, did you maintain that as your reading chamber?
Right. Yes.
Yes. So the readings continued in
Correct.
The same place.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank
good.
You.
Good to know.
Interesting question.
I was interested also. Well, I'm interested in a couple of things, but right now what's coming up is, there were other people in this environment when this was going on.
Yeah.
You and him, and then there were your sisters, right?
My sisters, my mother's sisters, my nieces, nephews, cousins.
Wow. The whole crowd
probably,
was there.
Yeah, in the 10-day period from Terminus until the celebration of life ended, I probably had close to 15 people cycling through the house and the reading space. The
Did any of those individuals hear the reading at all?
Yes, they did.
Everybody yielded to it, and actually the kind of the law was written. And when they showed up, and so Valerie read on schedule,
no matter what
was happening, come hell or high water, and everybody moved aside and was very respectful.
It was actually pretty exciting as a reader, because there were times that I would be reading and there would be preparations for breakfast or preparations for dinner happening behind my back. In the kitchen, and it was really exciting that all that stuff was going on while I'm doing this really sacred reading for my mom.
Really,
they did lower it a few decibels. Everybody made an effort to be quiet.
They did.
Well,
a bit.
Yeah, you might remember the Loud family. Do you remember the Loud family that was on TV for a while?
Yeah.
The first, but yeah. Yeah, this is the original Loud family.
I see. Okay, good. So, did you read then for like a couple of days, and then that was sufficient, or did you continue to read, or what happened?
I read for every day from February 29th until April 21st. The day before my 62nd birthday.
Happy birthday. And happy birthday, Linda, too, right?
Oh, thank you.
Yes. Today is her birthday.
So you read the entire cycle. That's a long time.
She is very assiduous, and she did not miss a single time, and whatever was happening was completely irrelevant. And everybody learned that it was when she said it's time for reading, they just got out of the way. Well, for the most part.
So, go ahead.
So,
that's it.
as a reading chamber, being part of the living area and being filled with family and friends and memories and all of the other things that occur, generally speaking, when there's a death of a loved one in the family, tell me about your experience with not just the disciplined practice of doing the readings each time, but what was the quality of your state or your attitude or how you approached it. And the reason I'm asking this is because I had a family member die when we were all living in a very small building in the community here, and there was really no place for me to go to get away to do my reading. So I completely understand how it is when you have, you know, the daily life is right next to the sacred chamber. So that's why I'm asking the question is, how did you approach that?
Well, it's interesting that you would ask that, Pat, because one of the things that Harry kept giving me feedback about was how weird it was that I was really comfortable with all this chaos going on around me while I was doing the reading. And there was one time when I was at his house when it was time to do a reading, and I left the room where he has his sacred space established for doing the reading. I left the door open because in my experience of doing the reading, I create the chamber.
Right.
And the chamber is, for me, the envelope that I create with the experience of myself in the universe.
In other words, a movable feast for her.
Yeah, nicely put. So how is it, how does that work? Let me, rather than you or you guys answering, Austin answering, how does that work that she could do that? She's in a space. Dan, we have people online there? Or? Okay. So the question is how did that work that this occurred? It was so in the chaos of the house. People were making dinner and breakfast. And
well,
there she was.
This is Linda. This is Linda. When we wouldn't always know when she would choose to go in to read. You might smell the sulfur from the match first, or you might hear the singing bowl. Then you would hear the rhythmic chanting of the invocation. And suddenly, it was there. It was palpable. And if you wanted to go join in, and many times different family members would come into the room and stand silently behind her. She faced out the window and read. I've been wanting her to record the readings because I don't think I've ever heard anyone read this kind of sacred text in a way that really reaches in and grabs you. And the way she reads, it's so clear and so, I don't know, it just carries that whole space with it. So even if, you know, I'd gotten caught in making dinner, I was still a part of it because I could hear the reading. I could hear and feel that space.
I double, triple emphasize that your friends would all value a recording of Valerie doing the reading cycle. Please accommodate at least your friends, if not the rest of us. Put it on any format you can possibly do. We will hand it to Oz, and he can make the duplicate copies that everybody in your family will. I'm not joking. I'm very serious. The reason why is because it is an oral tradition, much as EJ has made it available to us by book, by word, by reading. It is an oral tradition, and in our technological world, oral means recording. So that's what we have to keep pushing along in the wave of the world, the way that the path is in the world. We've got to match that path. And as many people as can do this, you know, many people here have done it. Not, they haven't promoted it or sent it out to be sold or whatever, but, you know, there's one in French, there's a couple in Italian, there's some in Spanish, and every potential version that we can possibly hear, nothing's better than that. So excuse me for interrupting, but I just emphasize it's so helpful.
Well, it was always, her reading always was calming and enlivening, as is reflected in the text. I just recently finished listening to Richard Gere's reading of the Chogram Trungpa Book of the Dead. And Valerie's about a billion times better than Richard Gere, even though they both have great.
Why is that? He's a trained actor.
This was just kind of
he's a highly skilled, trained actor.
Right, right. But it was just a reading, as if maybe he was reading a novel rather than.
Valerie, what's the difference?
Pardon?
What's the difference? Harry, George?
Okay.
What's the difference?
She uses a certain tempo. She uses a tempo that's balanced and paced and fluid. It has some of the characteristics of what I've learned in Ericksonian hypnosis, sort of almost a hypnotic, spellbinding kind of rhythm.
George?
I suppose.
George, what's the difference?
What's that?
What's the difference between a highly skilled and trained actor, Richard Gere, reading in his element of the Tibetans, and Valerie, a person? Why did Linda and others think that her remarks were more potent, more effective, let's say?
Well, you know, as I was listening to that, I couldn't help but remember an episode from Gurdjieff's book, Meetings with Remarkable Men, in which he describes these two ancient sages, both about 400 years old, one named Brother Says and one named Brother All. And Gurdjieff is making the point that the voices of these two equally enlightened beings had almost opposite effects. So if I could just read what it says, you'll get the sense of it. When Brother Says speaks, it is indeed like the song of the birds in paradise. From what he says, one is quite, so to say, turned inside out. One becomes as though entranced. His speech purls like a stream. And one no longer wishes anything else in life but to listen to the voice of Brother Says. But Brother All's speech has almost the opposite effect. He speaks badly and indistinctly, evidently because of his age. No one knows how old he is. Brother Says is also very old. It is said 300 years old, but he is still a hale old man, whereas in Brother All, the weakness of old age is clearly evident. The stronger the impression made at the moment by the words of Brother Says, the more this impression evaporates until there ultimately remains in the hearer nothing at all. But in the case of Brother All, although at first what he says makes almost no impression, later the gist of it takes on a definite form more and more each day, and is instilled as a whole into the heart and remains there forever. And when we became aware of this, just one last paragraph here, when we become aware of this and began trying to discover why it was so, we came to the unanimous conclusion that the sermons of Brother Says proceeded only from his mind and therefore acted on our minds, whereas those of Brother All proceeded from his being and acted on our being. Yes, Professor, knowledge and understanding are quite different. Only understanding can lead to being, whereas knowledge is but a passing presence in it. New knowledge displaces the old, and the result is, as it were, a pouring from the empty into the void. So really the point that this brings to my attention is you can take a very accomplished man in the ordinary sense, like Richard Gere, and be, you know, just entranced with his rendition. But he's really only reading from his mind, whereas my sense is that Valerie is reading from her own being, which she has been working on for herself, and that the sound of Valerie's voice, even if, I know, Linda, you say it's even better than Richard Gere's, but even if it was worse, it's the ability of her being to communicate with the essential self of her mother or Louise.
Her listeners.
Or to the listeners, exactly right. In other words, we, as we develop our own beingness in spiritualizing ourselves, our interactions with others ends up spiritualizing them as well, you know, often without their awareness.
Go ahead, Pat.
This is for George, but also for anyone who's on the chat there, or anyone who's sitting in this room. We have several guests here with us tonight, and I was going to offer for a few minutes to pose this question that David posed it specifically to Valerie and Linda and Harry about the experience that they have had recently, and I'm going to ask if anyone has any relationship to what they're describing, which I would name as the shared reading chamber. So most of us do our readings privately as part of our practice. We don't necessarily step outside our private reading chamber. So the question has to do with, are there any experiences that you have had in shared reading chambers? And you can answer online, or if you're in the room here and you want to have the phone handed to you, you may respond in the room.
Yeah. Well, Pat, I certainly had one with you where I shared your space.
Yeah.
That the space is movable.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
Take it with you. So I have spaces now at both ranches and here at the house and even in Valerie's room. And from Valerie, I've learned that you can even do it in the kitchen.
Because the space is set by the individual, not the physicality.
The physical locality is actually irrelevant.
So there's part of this, and Pat, and you're both bringing up a great point. The reader has a duty, and the duty of the reader is to present the material to the voyager. I'll say that again.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
To present the material to the voyager. And the only way you can do that is what Valerie said at the very beginning when she said, I got into that space. And it was this subjective space, and then she began to read. And she got there by the use of the obligatory reader's material. So can you judge that for yourself? And the answer is yes, you can. And are we reluctant to judge it for ourselves? Yes, we are. Right?
David, I would like to add one thing, if I might. I mean,
okay.
There's a lot of people involved in helping people who are doing readings. And one thing I think is very important is that I noticed that both Linda and Valerie were experiencing compassion fatigue, because she's not just reading for her. She was chief cook and bottle washer, housekeeper, nurse, and social worker all at the same time for her mother, all the while she was doing a full-time job from home, at which she's so confident her boss let her stay home and do it so she could take care of her mother and be with her for her last days on the planet. So that's not going to be the case for all readers, but nonetheless, people who do a lot of reading, such as Pat and her group, they need support too when they're doing this. So arranging, on a practical note, to have people give them relief, to get nurses, to hire them, to find them, get people to volunteer. However you do it, use bubble gum and baling wire if necessary.
To hold it together, yeah.
Hold it together. But to give them some respite from the duties that they take. And it made a huge difference when that was made to happen for Valerie and Linda.
I appreciate you bringing that point up. And we're going to hear from somebody else here who is professionally and personally experienced. This is Mary Donald, who some of you have met before. But Mary is from Canada, and she and Jim are visiting right now. So this is hopefully it's going to get on camera here. Okay.
Fine. Just talking about making the reading space a movable feast for me, and I was doing a 49-day reading for my brother, and I had to go on a long trip somewhere that one day, so I took everything and did it in the car. But, you know, I'll say again, I was on a trip one day in the middle of my reading, so I did the reading in the car. So I brought the material, the bell, and, you know, whatever I could. And it, so I really like that idea of the movable feast, but we do have to bring it. But I also wanted to say, in terms of Valerie being more real than Richard Gere, it's not just her heart. It's the emotion.
David, you can't hear?
No, she can't hear, because they're listening to the phone.
So I didn't know how to, here.
Sit there.
Do you want me to say it again?
Sit there, yeah, and then say it towards this microphone.
Kind of say it.
And also, incidentally, you have to do both mics.
Bring that.
Again?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, just...
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, focus on the last part, though.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Thank you.
As I was saying, mostly that when you were mentioning that Valerie's, or that readings are a movable feast, I had done it in a car, which I found helpful, but about in terms of Valerie having more effect than Richard Gere, I thought it was also that she spoke from her heart, not just the mind, but not just the essence, but from her heart, because there was emotion of love involved, which is not to be ignored.
A critical part of it.
Yeah.
Very critical part of it. So we create the space. Yes, we all have, you know, our altar spaces, and we construct them in a certain way that we work with. Harry has one at each of the ranches and at his home, and we may all have that. But the essential part of the space creation is the person and what you bring to it. Are you willing to stand in the place that is that vulnerable and be the guide at that time. Mm-hmm. That's what it is.
And I just wanted to say that I commend your family and friends
yeah.
for being
yeah.
so
really?
Open
yeah.
because
very
I, yeah, I'm just amazed that that
very.
Many people were
yeah,
willing to let you go ahead.
Significant.
Okay,
but
thank
I just
you.
Have to speak more to that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary.
You're not more than I was either.
Yeah.
I think you have to turn the...
I've got to say that the wording I'm using is very precise here. I'm using the language that's called a shared reading chamber. My understanding of the use of the word reading chamber for most people is a private experience. On occasion, we do readings together, but normally we are separate individuals when we do the readings. Now, this remarkable event that you are relating to us tonight makes me think about something that I haven't for a very long time, which is the shared reading chamber is a continuous linkage by usage. Now, that's not something that you would necessarily relate to doing readings. But if you think about it, the bedside reading, the reading in the altar space, the reading in our car, I do readings in airports,
mm-hmm.
Those locations are not the shared. The shared is the energetic resonance that is created, developed, and maintained by doing readings in those shared chambers. So that speaks to what I think you guys have demonstrated very clearly, which is there is not a physical separation between the ordinary life activities and the shared reading chamber. They're, what do you have it when it's like this? Contiguous. They are contiguous. They have a shared border. And,
yes, and they even interpenetrate, just like we have, what we are experiencing right this moment, because
yes.
we're three sitting here at a table in Austin, Texas, and we definitely feel a member of this meeting space tonight.
Oh, totally.
That's right.
Totally. But do you hear where I am emphasizing the strength of our shared reading comes from our continuous receptivity to that
right.
energy. So it's
yes.
not a separate event. It is part of the
yes.
regular event, okay? I guess my language is falling.
No. No.
That's
not so much that. It's that Pat is actually touching on a subtlety that is critical to what this event is demonstrating to us. And the concept of the shared space
mm-hmm.
is it's not worldly in a sense, okay?
Yes.
All right. And just leave that for the moment.
Yeah.
We'll come back to it. We have Dan, did you want to say something?
We have a comment from Grocky. Was reading once from my apartment to my father, who was in ICU in the hospital. My girlfriend was with me, so in that sense, it was a shared chamber, and maybe what happened was because of her, her presence in my room. In any event, the reading went really deep, and then somehow became a very palpable, very real back-and-forth conversation between me and my father. And after that, from then on, about another 6 to 8 months that he was alive, all the many differences and conflicts between me and my father were completely gone.
Thank you. Thank you, Grocky.
Thank you, Grocky. Is Molly on?
Thank you, Grocky.
Molly Midway. There's so much depth in this.
Yeah.
And we all have a passion for this kind of work, the work that we can do for others in this manner. And it's so important to share together. I mean, we read a book by ourselves, we read these chambers by ourselves, but occasionally we should read to each other as well. Just read to each other and allow yourself to be read to. And that's so very important. But I wanted to comment on, ask a question that I've been wanting to ask that Rocky kind of implied. He said that during this experience there was a conversation that went on, I think between him and his father is what he's implying. And I was wondering how that was for you, Valerie or Linda.
Mm-hmm.
How was there a conversation? That, whatever that was.
Well, that's an interesting label. The conversation did not happen between the biological machine and the biological machine.
No, nor am I implying that form of conversation.
Dialogue.
Maybe the word dialogue, maybe the word contact, maybe the word message, maybe the word something like that, okay?
So this is just my perception. This is Valerie talking. My mother heard the message when I was reading for Linda's mother. And her essential self said, okay, thanks for laying out the map. My mother was a long-term Girl Scout, and she loved maps. So when the space was created by me, Valerie, and the biological machine, letting go my mother and her biological machine, my mother's essential self says, I've got the map. I'm going
again.
Let it go.
Right. She needed the map, and she needed to know that the map was available to her.
Yeah.
David, and by the way, her mother really was a director of the Girl Scouts for all of Texas. She was a Girl Scout for 60 years or so. So that was her context.
That was her context. That was her context
that she moved
with
in.
With compasses and maps and directions and do-it-yourself, find-your-own-way type things.
Yep, exactly.
So just when we read, we're of course we become enriched by it, but part of our job is to read for the Voyager.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know when the Voyager is going to get it. We don't need to know. It's not our job.
So one more point there, Valerie. I appreciate you going over this with us in this level of slow and careful detail, because it allows us to address those the moments of the in-between.
That's right.
That's the only way I can catch some of the stuff that's gone by. And I'm going to ask you about this, not that you have to answer, but a couple of times tonight you have mentioned, I think both Harry and you have mentioned, that the readings were not necessarily for your mother. They were for her previous biological machine chamber that she used, and also for those who were hearing. Did I understand correctly that was sort of the quality of some of the experience that you had?
Yes, Pat, I think you're absolutely correct. When I was doing the cycle for Ray Marchione and that transition piece from her terminus to the end of the cycle, she had already transitioned out.
Right.
Got it.
But the reading was for all beings everywhere, and that included the individuals who had the opportunity to hear me when I was doing this cycle in the morning and the evenings.
Good. So that brings me to the point I wanted to make about this, which is just as the readings for Linda's mother were heard by your mother, and she was able to access the teaching because of that circumstance. Similarly, the readings each time that we deliver a reading cycle is not only for the Voyager to whom it is addressed, or for all beings everywhere, or for the benefit of the Absolute, or however we specify. It is also at the moment for the ones who are within hearing distance, including yourself and any unknowns that may be around you. And the reason I say this is because my mother, 30 plus years ago, no, longer than that, was asked to be the proofreader for the 1984 or 5 edition of the Red ABD.
Right.
Now, my mother was an English teacher and very literal, but, you know, that was the opportunity for that being to hear that teaching. There's no way she wants to have anybody do any readings to her. If we want to do more stuff, that's fine. But she read it.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, there are a lot of transmission vectors for something contagious. This teaching is very contagious, so there's lots of transmission vectors out there that we've not heard of yet. Anything will do.
The virus.
It is a virus. It is, and it is viral in a proper sense. We're getting toward the end of our time.
Yeah.
And usually we, our agreement is we're going to work for about an hour together.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I want to honor that for this moment.
Yeah.
But I, this is like opening a book and reading the introduction and realizing that there's a whole conversation yet to be had. And I suspect, Valerie, a little bit, that some of the questions that Pat was asking you and others helped you realize some of the work you were doing during that time. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so this is one person's experience and some friends that helped us all reflect on it. This is serious work. And we're able to do the work in a serious manner together. We meet like this on Wednesday nights, mainly so because we're a commonality of friends that want to get together and investigate some of this material with each other. Our, these are our fellow workers. These are our companions on the path. And I wanted to know if Molly was on the line, because I was in the midst of a whole reading cycle once, and she was over at my house, and I had to break to go read, and she came with me. I consider myself a pretty decent reader. You know, I mean, I always feel like I have a lot more to learn. But we got in this space, and we started working. I started doing the obligatory reader's prayer. And then she joined in, and it just went boom. Okay? So we always have lessons around us to be learned. I was very fortunate that particular day. So work together as much as you can. If you have someone that you can read to that today, tomorrow, the next day, do that. If you have a real good friend, allow them to read for you, because that'll just light you up. and then we'll have something to take away for next time.
And all of you lovely folks on the phone, you are welcome any time you wish to come. Just let us know. We'll make a nice big space for you.
Absolutely, because a big space is quiet.
Well, the Austin Red Pin Group sends their warmest regards to everyone at Mecca.
Thank you.
And back to the warm group that's working there in Austin as well.
And also to Silverdale.
And Silverdale, George, thank you for that, finding that incredible quote at the right time.
Thank you, George. As always, spot on.
So well,
thank
together
you.
We make a great stew.
We do.
Stew together. And we'll look forward to seeing everybody next Wednesday at 7 o'clock again. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.